What's good, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the I'ma Tell Like It T.I.S. podcast with your host, yours truly, Jai Shields. Got a jam-packed good show for you this week. Recap week 10 of the National Football League and all the things that was happening this past NFL Sunday. Recap, of course, my Bengals getting absolutely walloped by the Steelers. Preview the Thursday night matchup happening tomorrow between the Cardinals and the Seattle Seahawks. Tie a bow on the Masters, Dustin Johnson winning the Masters and Tiger Woods and all in that scenario. And then, of course, the NBA with off-season news, as we will have some, we got trades that I have to get to in this program, along with the NBA draft that is happening later tonight. So, starting first things first, we start with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with the Week 10 NFL recap. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who got absolutely destroyed by the New Orleans Saints on Sunday night last Sunday, came into Carolina, good Carolina football team that, to be quite honest with you, gave the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl champions a run for their money. And if a 67-yard field goal, which had plenty of leg, if it didn't go way wide right, you know, the who knows how that game would have turned out. So the Tampa Bay Buccaneers leave Tampa, go on the road to play Carolina, and they took care of business as you would expect. Tom Brady and the crew. Tom Brady, 28 for 39, 341 yards passing, 3 touchdowns. And Ronald Jones, what an afternoon. He had 23 carries, 192 rushing yards, and a touchdown, including a 98-yard run, longest ever in Buccaneers franchise history. Chris Godwin had a good day as well, 6 receptions, 92 yards receiving. Meanwhile, from a Carolina perspective, Teddy Bridgewater had to exit out the game. He was 18 for 24, 136 yards passing, 2 touchdowns and an interception. If from a Tampa Bay perspective, you know what? This is what you wanted. You know, you came, you know, you and Bruce Arians got the team together before the game, and he said, you know what, this game, it goes in the trash. Watch the film once, get rid of it, because they did a absolutely pathetic job that Sunday night at home against the New Orleans Saints. So what did they do? They threw it out, and they say, you know what, next game, new week, new day, let's move on. And you know what, it showed. Tom Brady played significantly much better, and Tom Brady also does a phenomenal job of coming back after where he lost the previous game by 20 points or more. I think he's only lost 2 games in his entire career. Where coming off of a loss of 20 points or more. Tom Brady, of course, you knew he was going to bounce back. And again, the Carolina Panthers defense isn't the New Orleans Saints defense, but you still get the idea. But you still have to, you know, you play who's on the schedule. You still got to play the games, and lo and behold, Tampa Bay went out there and took care of business against the Carolina Panthers, and that is item number one. And Tampa gets back on track, improving themselves to a 7-3 record, winning that game 46-23. The second game that I'm gonna get to here is the Packers winning by the hair of their chinny chin chin against the 1-7 at the time, the 1-7 Jacksonville Jaguars, winning that game 24-20. That game was way too close for comfort. If you are a Green Bay Packers fan, Aaron Rodgers 24 for 34, 325 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, ran for a touchdown as well in the game, only threw 1 interception. And then, of course, their receiver, Valdez, let me see if I can pronounce his name properly, Marquez Valdez-Scandling, had a big game yesterday as well, or yesterday, on Sunday, with four receptions, 149 yards receiving, and a touchdown. That game was way too close. It was way too close for comfort from a Green Bay standpoint, and you don't like the idea of the fact that you gave the Jaguars a sense of false hope of making that football game close as it was, 24-20, and at the point in the game they were down. The game was what, tied 17 all in the middle of the third quarter. So if you are a fan of the Green Bay Packers, you got to be a little concerned at the fact that hey, we got a 1-7 football team hanging around like this. So that of course would bother you. But when you have Aaron Rodgers, who the bad man that he is, you are going to end up taking home and bringing home the goods as the Green Bay Packers take care of business 24-20, and they really have no margin for error. Having lost to the Buccaneers, of course, in that absolute smackdown back in October, and then, of course, you got a fight with best record between the Cardinals and the Seahawks and even with the Rams in the mix, and then of course the Green Bay Packers, who should went out and finish the season,14-2, but if you are a Green Bay Packers fan, you have to look at it and say, look, we have a prime opportunity here to take, Drew Brees, and I'm going to get to him in a minute. Drew Brees is out with broken ribs and a collapsed lung. The Seattle Seahawks really have hit an abutment. They've played poorly offensively the last couple of games. They've played Russell Wilson has not been the stellar MVP that he was the beginning of the season. And then, of course, you have to look at Arizona. They're good. But are they going? But with the inexperience that they have, an inexperienced head coach and an inexperienced quarterback, are they going to last for good? And the Rams, and nothing scares you about the Rams defense is very, very good, but nothing scares you about them offensively speaking. So the Green Bay Packers really have a key opportunity to essentially run the table and steal the number one seed from their fellow NFC compatriots. They're right now 7-2. Their schedule, and I'm going to give it to you here as I'm talking to you, their schedule is not that difficult, if at all, the rest of the season. They have the Colts this week. The Bears offense stinks. And then they got the Eagles, who can't get out of their own way. The Lions, Panthers. Hardest game you could debate would be the Titans on December 27th, and then 2 days after the new year comes in, they play the Bears on the road. So the Green Bay Packers have no excuse why they cannot finish the season 14-2. And quite frankly, I expect them to finish 14-2, and because of the fact that they only have two losses and they have a much easier schedule than all their other teams, the Saints and the Bucks got to play the Chiefs, the Seahawks got to, the Seahawks play the Cardinals out tomorrow, and that'll be no easy task. So the Packers could end up getting number one seed by default simply because of the fact they have an easier schedule, and essentially the games that they've lost have been on the front end of the schedule instead of the back end of the schedule. But that's where you lie with the Packers and the Jacksonville Jaguars. One third item I want to get to here, and I don't want to necessarily waste time breaking down Texans and you know, Texans and Browns. But the thing that bothered me, and I'm not a bettor. I do not bet. I don't, you know, I give y'all, y'all listeners out there to listen to this like the bet, which is why I give you the point spread when I do the picks at the end of the show, every Saturday, every weekend. But so I'm not a bettor, and if I was, me betting Browns and Texans wouldn't have been the first game to come across my mind. But why in the world? Nick Chubb ran 59 yards in the Browns' 10-7 win on Sunday, and he went out of bounds with less than a minute left is when he ran out of bounds. Like, I don't understand. I understand, and everyone was all bent out of shape because of the 4-point spread and with the 4.5 point spread, so that was a bad beat, and people were all bent out of shape that the spread wasn't covered with the betting of that game. But I don't understand the logic. You know, the logic was, well, get out of bounds so you don't. So essentially, that scenario between the Falcons and the Lions doesn't happen. Well, you have to keep in mind the situation. Okay, first off, the score is 10-7. Okay, so if Nick Chubb scores a touchdown, it makes it what? 17-7. There's about a minute, less than a minute left in the game, if I remember correctly. The Titans have no timeouts, and they're down two scores. 17-7, that's a 10-point deficit. With less than a minute left, no timeouts. So the chances of Deshaun Watson and that inept Texans offense going down the field against the Cleveland Browns defense that's played pretty well the last couple of games, the chances of them going down the field scoring, whether it's a field goal first or a touchdown first, doesn't make any difference. The chances of them actually going down the field and essentially tying up the ball game is so slim, it's near impossible. Because you got less than a minute left, no timeouts, and you have to get an onside kick. An onside kick that is successful, what? Less than 10% of the time. Less than 10% of the time. It's an impossible play, unless you're playing the Atlanta Falcons. It's an impossible play. So I don't understand Stefanski. I guess Stefanski told Chubb to basically do what he did. I don't understand Stefanski's logic behind it. I don't understand Nick Chubb's logic behind it. Because scoring a touchdown makes it 17-7, 10-point lead. Less than a minute left. The Texans have no timeouts, and they have to recover an onside kick in the situation. I understand that these coaches are all paranoid and are basically kept up late at night in a cold sweat, fearing the worst, fearing the impossible could happen in a sequence of a game. But they have to be realistic. You know, you held the Texans all game to 7 points with Deshaun Watson at quarterback. You held them to 7 points, and your defense has played well the majority of the season. No timeouts, less than a minute left, 10-point deficit, and they have to get a 2-point. And they also have to score twice and get an onside kick. So I don't understand, and far be it for me to do the belly aching for the bettors and the fantasy people out there, but the logic behind Nick Chubb going out of bounds makes no sense. 17-7, less than a minute left. Texans have to score twice in order to tie the game. Plus an extra point and a field goal, by the way, which with that weather up in Cleveland was no gimme. Kicking an extra point and kicking the field goal to get to add the seven, to add the three onto the seven. So I don't understand Cleveland's logic of, well, let Nick Chubb go out of bounds. It's 17-7. The game is the Nick Chubb scoring the touchdown has no difference, and it does not affect how the game ends. It has no difference on the game. The Texans lost. Okay, as soon as Nick Chubb got that first down, the game was over. It doesn't matter if Nick Chubb falls at the one or scores a touchdown, the game's over. So that was very interesting to me. Chargers, so that was interesting to me. Not to get off on that tangent, but I had to get that off my chest. The Chargers and the Dolphins. Dolphins, I tell you, they're 3-2 at home at Hard Rock Stadium. They improved to 6-3 on the season. 29-21 was the final score. Tua Tagovailoa, again, didn't blow you away, but very, very good. 15 for 25, 169 yards passing, 2 touchdowns in the game, in the football game. Justin Herbert, 20 for 32, 187 yards passing, 2 touchdowns and interception. Then, you know, not one of his best performances. Chargers, of course, having issues with the special teams, so that's not anything that would surprise you. And simply put, the Dolphins are right now in a prime key circumstance to maybe steal the division from Buffalo, who had a tough loss against the Cardinals. I'll get to that in a minute. But they also, with the help of the extended play, they can end up making the playoffs. You know, let's look at Miami's schedule right quick. Miami plays right now. They got the Broncos this week, the hapless Jets, the Bengals will give them a hard time. Then they got the Chiefs, so they got the Chiefs, and then the Patriots. It depends if they're still in it. Will they? And then they play Buffalo to close out the season, so they could fall off and finish 6-10, 7-9, 8-8. So they could fall off, but it would not shock me if Miami ended up making the playoffs. Would not shock me. As for Los Angeles, fall to 2-7 on the season, and I believe have not won a. When was the last time the Chargers won a road game? Last time the Chargers won a road game, of course, was week one against my Bengals. And they haven't won a game since they beat Jacksonville 39-29. Back in, when was this? Back on October 25th. So, Herbert's a hell of a player, but they're in trouble. I don't expect, nor should Anthony Lynn be allowed to keep his job. No disrespect to Anthony Lynn, but he's got a guy who's in prime position to get Rookie of the Year, and you've only won one game with him as starting quarterback. That's unacceptable. That's where you stand with the Chargers and the Dolphins. Seahawks and Rams, I tell you, I don't know what in the world is going on with the Seattle Seahawks, but they're in trouble. Okay, and as an instance, and I'm going to pick on two. I got to pick on Pete Carroll, and I got to pick on Russell Wilson. First off, Pete Carroll, when the game was, I forget the exact score, but in the second half, it had to have been either tied or it was close. I forget the specifics, so bear with me with that. But on a 4th and inches, when Seattle has the ball in their own territory, why in the world? And the game was close, and the game was still very much, Seattle was not out that football game. And the game was in much reach of Seattle stealing it from Los Angeles. But why in the world did Pete Carroll on a 4th and inches send Russell Wilson and company out in a single back formation, no less, to use the hard count to get the Rams to jump off sides? I don't understand. I do not understand that. 4th and inches, you're between their 35, 40-something yard line. Okay, so you're not backed up inside the 10. Okay, you're hovering around midfield, albeit in your own territory. 4th and inches, your offense has struggled all day long. Give them some momentum, okay, and your defense for a change, even though I let Jared Goff throw for over 300 yards receiving. The defense, and compared to past games that they've played, has played quite decently. Go for it. And so, you know, if you don't get it, you don't get it. Your defense holds them to a field goal. Fair. But I don't understand the logic of a fourth and inches inside, you know, in within your own territory, close to midfield, games close like that. I forget the exact score, what it was. But, and then Pete Carroll decides to send out Russ Wilson for a hard count. Rams don't fall for it, and we're going to punt the football. Really? When you got Russell Wilson, who for the first half of the season was the league's MVP, DK Metcalf, and you can't run a quarterback sneak. It was not fourth and five, fourth and seven, fourth and eight. It was fourth and inches. And he decides to send Russell Wilson up with the hard count, which rarely ever works. If you're a well-disciplined football team, you don't fall for the hard count. And what happened? They didn't fall for the hard count. Instead of them saying, you know what, screw it, go for it anyway, they called timeout, you know, punt the football. Really, Pete? That's what we're doing now? That bothered me. And I'm sitting here screaming at the TV. Go for it. It's fourth and inches. Quit being chicken. Have the cojones to go for it. Fourth and inches. Not fourth and five. Not fourth and ten. Fourth and inches. I don't care where you are on the field. Fourth and inches. You may call me overly aggressive as a play caller if I was a football coach. Fourth and inch. I don't care what the down is. I don't care where I am on the field. I don't care what the score is. I don't care what the quarter is. Fourth and inches at all times. I'm going for it. If I'm down by three, if I'm down by seven, if I'm down by 17, fourth and inches, I'm going for it. I could care less what the stupid, I don't care. Fourth and inches is so much of a manageable, easier enough play to get. It shouldn't be rocket science. Have Russell Wilson run a QB sneak, or DK Metcalf run a little slant, run a little 5 yard, little 5 yard dig to get the first down. It's ridiculous. Fourth and inches, Pete, go for it. For crying out loud. And Russell Wilson, I'm going to get on Russell Wilson too, who was 22 for 37, 248, and threw two interceptions, not a touchdown pass. Russell Wilson doesn't look like Russell Wilson the last two games. Here's what I want to tell Russell Wilson, okay? And I love Russell. But Russell, stop with the little, look, leave the podcasting to the people like me that weren't blessed with the ability to play professional football at the quarterback position for a living. Leave the podcasting to us. Leave it to me. Leave it to Bat McAfee. Leave it to Mad Dog Russo. Leave it to us. Barstool Sports. Leave the podcasting to us. The little Danger Talk podcast that he does, ESPN, that's fine and dandy, all that. Russell, save that stuff for the off season, or God forbid when the world shuts down again, we have to be sequestered inside our own home. Save it for that, okay? The only non-football thing that should take priority for you is your family. That's it. Sierra and them kids of yours and Futures kid who you're raising. That's it. Okay, no podcasting, and screw the podcasting, and stop worrying about that dopey Let Russ Cook trademark. And nobody, save the goofiness for when it's time to do the goofiness outside of the football season. You've played poorly the last two games you played. You weren't exactly lights out in the Cardinal game about a month ago. Come on, Russell. You were the MVP of the league like yesterday. First day, no doubt, MVP. And all of a sudden, you're playing like a scrub. Why? Why? Save the trademark. Save the stupid podcast. Save all that for later. There's a time and a place for that. Loser two in a row. No Seattle Seahawks fan who knows that your margin of error of winning an MVP award, because everyone treats Patrick Mahomes like he's the second coming of Jesus Christ. Everyone knows that your margin of error of when it comes to winning an MVP award, let alone getting a vote, is slim to none. You do yourself no favors when you go ahead and you play like crap and then you sit up here farting around doing stupid podcast episodes with Matthew McConaughey and trademarking the Let Russ Cook mantra. Come on, Russell, get your priorities in order. The only non-football thing that should come above your job as quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks is your family. That's it. That's the only exception. The podcast, the trade, all the little goofy intuitive crap, save that for later. That will be there in the off season when the season's over. That will be there for you when the football season's over. Your job, here's your job, Russell. Your job is not turn over the football and not essentially putting your team in the best position to win. Your job is to put your team in the best position to win and not turn over the football. Your job is to be Russell Wilson. There was an interception in that game. I don't know what the hell Russell Wilson saw, but he threw across it. He got about within a yard of crossing the line of scrimmage. He had a good 15 yards of daylight that he could have ran and slid and gotten some junk yardage. And instead, he gets to about an inch before he crosses the line of scrimmage, throws across his body back left side of the end zone, top of the end zone, and he throws it directly to a Rams defender for an interception. That stuff from you, Russ, cannot be tolerated and is not acceptable. You can't do it. When you have the ability to move and to run like you do, and you're a phenomenal all-pro, pro bowler, soon-to-be Hall of Fame quarterback, that's Super Bowl-winning quarterback, that's unacceptable. Especially with your experience. You can't do that. You got to be smart about the football, Russ. Got to be. You can't be that killish. You can't sit up here and try to, win the game with one throw, one play. Don't try to do too much. Cut all the extra crap. Get yourself refocused, because your Seattle Seahawks right now, don't they, as of right now, hold like the 7th seed? Y'all went from the 1 seed to the 7th seed and like that. There you go. Like that. You got out after the Cardinal game, you have a cakewalk because you play the NFC least, and you got to kick it up a notch December 27th when you play the Rams. And you have an easy one against the 49ers. So if you're a Seattle Seahawks, if you're Russell Wilson and Seahawks right now, your job is to finish the season 13-3. You can't lose these two divisional games, Thursday night and then second to last game of the season against the Rams, both at home. You cannot lose those games. And the 49ers, the NFC least, and the Jets will be an easy pickings. Your job, if you're Russell Wilson and Seattle Seahawks, cut out the foolishness, get yourself refocused, win out, and finish the season 13-3. That is your job. Not the podcast. That stuff will all be there. That's nice. That's entertaining. Spread out your brand. I understand all that. But there's a time and a place for everything. And the time and a place right now is for you to get refocused, get in that field room, work your ass off on the practice field, and put the Seahawks in the best position to win and win football games. The only thing non-football related that should come above football is your family. That's it. And being a full-time father and husband is no easy. I say it because my dad says it all the time. It's a round-the-clock job. As late comedian Bernie Mac, you say on the Bernie Mac show, it's a 24-hour-a-day job with no pay and no benefits, no pension, none of that. So being a good father and an active husband and an active father within a household, I can imagine is already taxing enough. Make life easier on yourself, Russ. If that's taxing enough alongside playing professional football for the Seattle Seahawks at the quarterback position, leader, best player on the team, don't make life harder on yourself and make life more complicated and busy than what it needs to be. That should be enough. Playing football and being there for your family. That extra stuff, you can do that to keep yourself occupied in the spring and in the late winter. Right now, your job is to win football games. Not asking Matthew McConaughey, you know, where he likes to drink his wild turkey whiskey at in the mountains in North Dakota. All right? Another team that's in trouble. Baltimore Ravens, who lost the game that they had no business losing to the New England Patriots, who we thought were dead and down for the count. You know, I'm not saying New England's going to make the playoffs, but improving the 4-5, they sure do keep their season alive. Ravens lose the game 23-17. It was just a complete mess, and I got to be fair. I can't put 24 for 34, 249, two passing. Outside, I can't put the. It'd be unfair for me to put this all on Lamar Jackson, so I'm not going to do that. What I am going to do, I'm going to get on the Ravens' defense when I'm getting off the field, and align New England to drive down the field on them and put up 23 points. You know, 13 in the second quarter, 10 in the third quarter. I am going to get on their defense for doing that. I'm also going to get on their defense get on the center, Matt Sicurta, who essentially thinks that it's that he's bowling at the AMF lanes, you know, and doesn't know how to snap the football. I mean, if I was a high school coach, I'd be irate at the pathetic snapping jobs by Matt Sicurta in that game. You know, they had a couple of they had a bad snap to Mark Ingram. They had another bad snap to Lamar in the game. I mean, they're too high. They're off to the side. They're, you know, it's been a couple snaps where he simply just slides the ball across the turf. Matt, get your stuff together. What are you doing? All right, you're a professional football player. Got one job. That's snap the football. I understand it was a monsoon, but he was very spotty with snapping the football in the Colt game. So I don't want to hear any people making excuses for, well, it was raining, it was a monsoon, the ball was wet and slippy. I don't want to hear any of that. What was his excuse in the Colt game? You're playing in a retractable roof dome stadium. It didn't rain a centimeter. What's your perfect conditions when that game they played in Indianapolis? What was his excuse then? Snapping the ball all over the place. Get yourself together. I understand Ravens fans out there, class act, you know, coming after his family. That again, that's despicable and that's taking it too far. But you're a grown man playing professional football, getting paid good money. Put your big boy pants on, man up, and snap the football better. Will you please? I mean, come on, Baltimore Ravens. You are supposed to, you know, your goal is to make it to play in the Super Bowl. Got unanimous MVP Lamar Jackson. Snap the football, right? Will you please snap the ball? I don't need to see replays. Him sliding the ball across the turf. The ball's going off to Lamar's left, Lamar's right. Mark Ingram can't get a clean handle on the snap. This is elementary, okay? You're a center. You got two jobs. That's snap the ball right and the block. All right, come on now. Snap the ball right and block. It's not rocket science. Get it together. And Lamar had a bad interception at the end of the half. And it's funny because I had the game on in the kitchen while I was cleaning up the dishes after dinner, and I said, and the Ravens were down, what were they, down 13-10, something like that? Down 13-10 at the end of the coming towards the end of the half. And I said, you know, tongue in cheek, like, yeah, they should let the ball fly a little bit and try to see if they can get a big chunk play and make, you know, to make the field goal a little easier for Tucker, you know, because he has to kick in the weather and everything else. And my sister standing next to me says, "All right, why aren't you say that? You know, if he's gonna do it, he's gonna turn the football, he's gonna throw an interception." Blah, blah, blah. So lo and behold, but like a minute or two later, and Lamar Jackson throws the ball downfield down the right sideline to Marquise Brown, who's a sad imitation of his cousin Antonio Brown as far as being a top number one wide receiver is concerned. And it was just a horrible, horrible, horrible interception at the end of the half. And the Ravens ended up going into the locker room with no points. And that, honestly, was Lamar's biggest mistake of the game. Because they could have tied the game up at 13-all, and who knows how the game would have went from there on out in the second half if the score was tied at 13 instead of New England being up 13-10. So that was a real bad job by Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. And then before I get to the Vikings and Bears game, it's crazy how I nearly skipped over it. How about that Cardinal and Bill game? The Hail Murray. Kyler Murray throwing. I mean, and you know what was funny? You know, when I saw that play being replayed on Football Night in America later that evening, You know what play first popped into my head when I saw it? I said, you know what? That play is eerily similar to 2015 NFC Divisional Playoffs Packers at the Cardinals when Aaron Rodgers threw the ball essentially to the point where he fell down. Aaron Rodgers threw when he's sent up there. He grabs the, you know, he's go. The I forget the specifics of the score, but it was to tie the game to send in overtime. Aaron Rodgers is rolling to, you know, same way as Murray did. So as a right hand quarterback, he's rolling to his left, going down towards the sideline, and heaves the ball to the point where he falls down in the process of the ball being released from his hands or from his right hand. And the only receiver there was Jeff Janis going up against two Cardinal defenders. One of them I specifically remember was Patrick Peterson. He throws the ball. He launches it in the air as high as he possibly can, putting essentially all of his weight into it, falling away from the play, and Jeff Janis somehow being double-teamed, sticks his hands in the air, and snatched the ball out the air to tie the game, and the extra point was made, and the Packers went in overtime, and then Larry Fitzgerald had an 80-yard run, had an 80-yard catch and run, and ended up winning the game two plays later, but that was back in 2015, and of course earlier in that season, Aaron Rodgers threw a Hail Mary to Richard Rodgers on a Thursday night game against the Lions on the road, and ended up winning, and that was a walk-off that ended up winning the game for the Packers. But that was one of the more phenomenal throws and catches you will ever see in your life. I mean, what a throw! I mean, Kyler Murray, who isn't at Aaron Rodgers' height, at what, 5'9", 5'10", going again, same thing as Rodgers, you know, rolling towards the sideline to his left, being a right-handed quarterback, putting all muscle and just as hard as he possibly can. Throws the ball, launches it down the sideline. Nearly, if he would have threw it a couple feet to the left, would have been out of bounds. Launches it in the air, and DeAndre Hopkins being double teamed, and then of course a safety who was essentially supposed to cover the right side of the field sprints over to the left side, gets there barely in time, and DeAndre Hopkins sticks up his hands and hauls it in to win the game 32-30. I mean, that was after Josh Allen went down the field the drive before and threw what we thought was a game-winning touchdown catch to Stephon Diggs. So, I mean, and the Bills had victory within their grasp. 21-yard touchdown pass to Stephon Diggs with 34 seconds left, which made it 30-26, which we thought would have won the game. A game that Buffalo had no business winning because Josh Allen turned over the football, throwing two interceptions, and then of course the Buffalo Bills being undisciplined with the penalties, ended up committing 9 penalties for 69 yards. A game that Buffalo had no business winning. Josh Allen turned over the football, and had penalties which cost them. on the defensive and on the offensive side. And then Kyler Murray just comes out of nowhere and just chucks the ball as high and as far as he can. And DeAndre Hopkins, who I still don't understand why in the hell Bill O'Brien made that asinine trade, trading DeAndre Hopkins for a bag of Takis. And DeAndre Hopkins sticks up both hands, best receiver in football, snatches the ball out of thin air, and catches it to win the game. But what a job, what a performance by DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray went 22 for 32, 245 yards passing. The only touchdown pass he threw in that game was that Hail Mary pass to DeAndre Hopkins to win the game. And Kenyon Drake had a hell of a game as well, 16 carries, 100 yards rushing. But Kyler Murray did run for two touchdowns, 61 carries on the ground as well. And DeAndre Hopkins, seven receptions for 127 yards receiving and a touchdown catch, of course, was that Hail Mary play. And that's where you stand with the Cardinals and the Bills. And the last item of business, then we'll take a break. Then I'll preview Seahawks and Cardinals and recap the Bengals game. Was the, I tell you, this game is not going into the vault in the 50-year, 51-season history of Monday Night Football. I mean, that Viking and Bear game, a complete bore. They got to stop putting these mediocre teams and putting these lame duck teams on Monday Night Football, because it is not a major draw. It is not a big-time matchup. The games are never good. They're competitive, but they're never good. Not enough offense, not enough scoring. There's just boring, dull football games. And Monday night was no different. Vikings winning the game 19-13. Kirk Cousins by default, because the Chicago Bear offense is just so inept and it's just so pathetic that they that essentially Kirk Cousins broke his Monday Night Football losing streak by default. And they won the game 19-13. Kirk Cousins wasn't exactly Brett Favre or Fran Tarkenton or Warren Moon in the game. 25 for 36, 292 yards passing, two touchdowns and an interception. Dalvin Cook had a decent game. Hurt himself earlier in the game, late in the game as well. Had 30 carries for 96 yards rushing on the ground. And Justin Jefferson, what a rookie stud that guy is. Eight receptions, 135 yards receiving. Meanwhile, the Chicago Bear offense is just a complete joke and it's just a complete disgrace. I mean, they are inept. They are inconsistent. They are an absolute eyesore to watch. They can't put the ball in the end zone. They had to rely on Cordell Patterson scoring their only touchdown in the game. That was a kick return to begin the second half. They cannot put the ball in the end zone. They have a hard time putting up points. The defense, of course, is a great defense. What's the point of having a great defense if you can't put the ball in the end zone? You know, defense can't defend and be your offense and provide the scoring for you. I mean, and the Bears, to quote the late Dennis Green, may he rest in peace. You know, the Bears are who we thought they were. I knew when they started 5-1 that was a fraudulent and a misleading 5-1 record. You know, beating the Lions, the Giants were awful at the beginning of the season. Falcons blew blowing leads left and right, blowing leads known to man. They got lucky beating when you have Nick Foles and Tom Brady on the same field, the team that Nick Foles is on is going to beat them. Not to mention Tom Brady didn't help matters. Not knowing what down it was at the end of that game. And of course, they beat the Panthers, who are a gritty team and a gutty team, but they are a rebuilding team. So we all knew, anyone with a brain, anyone who paid attention to the Chicago Bears this year, knew that they were a fraudulent 5-1 football team. You start playing the real teams, the Rams, the Saints, the Titans, and the Vikings, who are looking to save their season. You knew they couldn't deliver the goods because their offense is just so inept. And it doesn't get any easier. They got to play the Packers after the bye week. And then they got to play the Lions, which. And then the Texans, which they should be able to take care of. And then they play the Jaguars, who stink. And then they have the Packers. So maybe they get into the playoffs, but it's going to take a chicken wing and a prayer in order for them to make it into the playoffs with the highly competitive NFC, especially in the NFC West. And, of course, the NFC South has two playoff teams, and it's going to take a chicken wing and a prayer. It's going to take some divine intervention for the Chicago Bears, who look like they were in prime opportunity to get to the playoffs as a wild card team. Now, since they have played themselves out of it because of the fact that they've been inept and they can't score. They had a tough grit. They had played a tough gritty game against the Saints, but it wasn't enough as they fall to 5-5 on the season. Take a break, recap my Bengals, and talk preview Cardinals and Seahawks. This is the Amatelica TIS podcast. Don't go anywhere. Back after this. Welcome back to the Amatelica TIS podcast. Switching gears now, recapping the joke that was my Cincinnati Bengals getting absolutely slaughtered by the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday, a team that has owned us and that has beaten us consecutively since December of 2015. That was a game where Andy Dalton broke his thumb and AJ McCarron took over. And, of course, they beat us, what, like 3 weeks later in the playoffs? And that's a game that's haunted me ever since. But, you know, here's the story with the Bengals. They just... I had to turn the game off, to be quite honest with you. I had to turn the game off when the score was 29-7. I cannot. I understand it's rebuilding. I understand I didn't expect this team to compete. I get that. I understand all that. But good God, man, y'all have gotten beat. I don't know how many times. Let's do the math. Two times in 2015, you include the playoffs. Two times in 16, that's four. Two times in 17, that's six. Two times in 18, that's eight. And then two times in 2019, that's 10. And then once in 2020, that's 11. They've lost 11 straight games. They have not won a game against Pittsburgh since the beginning of the 2015 season. This is no rivalry. I understand Pittsburgh and Bengals rivalry. This is not a rivalry. Rivalry is when the two teams go at each other back and forth and give each other hell, and there's give and take. You know, a teammate went three in a row one time or another, and another teammate went. You know, there's some give and forth back and give and take. You know, Bengals Ravens rivalry back and forth. Bengals Bengals Browns rivalry back and forth. There's no back and forth to the Steelers and the Bengals. They have kicked our behind each and every single time they've played us. Bottom line, they've beaten us every single time for the last 5 years. When is it going to change? When is it going to change? And here's another thing that's bothering me too. Okay, Joe Burrow should not have to be immaculate and should not have to essentially win games by himself. Okay, there's 10 other guys that he plays on the field with and 11 other guys on the defensive side that's got to learn how to carry their weight too. Okay, Joe Burrow is not a one-man team. He doesn't think like that. He doesn't play like that. So you can't put all the weight on the Joe Burrow's shoulders. He's a rookie, after all. Still learning the ins and outs and the intricacies of the National Football League. So, and the weather wasn't exactly perfect either. Windy, and you had no Joe Mixon again. So, you can't put it all on the lap and all on the shoulders of Joe Burrow. You can't do it. You got to learn how to run the football without Joe Mixon, and your defense has to do a better job getting off the field and not let Brent Roethlisberger go 27 for 46 for 333 passing yards. 37 years old with a surgically repaired elbow. My God, I mean, come on, y'all. Four touchdown passes? This is what we're doing now. 36-10. And don't get me started on Alex Erickson at the beginning of the game, muffing a snap that fell right into his arms. Don't get me started with that. Catch the ball, protect it. My goodness gracious. Falls right into his arm. Look, dropped the ball from him. I mean, really? It really is. It's I swear. This team's gonna be the death of me. I swear. I mean, there's not a single positive you could have taken out of that football game. The offense was inept. The defense was pathetic, especially the secondary. We need Mixon back ASAP. And this is why I had such a huge issue with whoever runs the Bengals social media. I don't know. But whoever was running the Bengals social media, this is why you don't poke the bear. Okay, the Bengals, so whoever runs the Bengals social media pages thought it was a brilliant, genius idea. I guess they're busy, you know, coming up with things to talk about on the bye week. You know, I thought it was a bright idea for them to post a video of TJ Houshmandzadeh back in 2005, you know, shining his shoes off with a terrible towel. And thought that was a brilliant idea. But if anyone who's in that Bengals organization already know, someone, his boss, Mike Brown, someone should have told his source, like, hey, you idiot, do you realize what happened after TJ Houshmandzadeh did it with a terrible towel? Carson Palmer got his knee wrecked and we lost the playoff game. And we lost the playoff game. Should have won our division, and people then argue that they should have won the Super Bowl that year. So when will you learn? When will this the thing with this team that angers me to no end? They never learn from their mistakes. They never learn. You do not antagonize your opponent. You don't do it. You don't give them bulletin board material and expect them not to one ear out the other for them to take it and then expect y'all to win. It doesn't work that way. You poke the bear, you antagonize your opponent, you're going to pay for it. Plain and simple. You don't think Tomlin showed his football team that? We have not beaten the Pittsburgh Steelers in 5 years. We are not exactly in a position right now to stick out our chest and to do the math. Matthew McConaughey. We're not in a position to do that right now. We haven't beaten them in 5 years. We went 2-14 last year, first all pick in the draft. I understand we got Burrow, but let's not get bigger than our britches. Let's check our ego at the door. Okay, just because we have Joe Burrow doesn't mean that we're the hottest best team in National Football League. That would go to the Pittsburgh Steelers. We haven't lost a game since Week 17 against Baltimore last December. So again, I don't understand that. Why, and you know good and well that if you use that terrible towel and like the quote unquote disrespect it, I don't know what it is about it, but it's got magical powers. And if that team, and if the Steelers end up playing or facing that team again, not only do they beat them, they absolutely destroy them. And more times than not, they also end up going to the Super Bowl. So thanks for that. But there's no rivalry. There's no rivalry. Rivalry is when the Bengals, you know, straighten up and fly route and punch the Steelers in the mouth a couple times. Instead of the Bengals being, you know, a little train that could, and end up, all they are is just the Steelers' doormat in the division. Bengals go 14-2. The two losses they'd have on that in that season would be to the Steelers. It doesn't matter if they go 14-2. They can't beat them, and that's an issue. They cannot beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that is a problem. And you cannot expect to compete in this competitive AFC North with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield and the Browns, and the Steelers who somehow, some way, still figure out ways to win football games. You cannot be competitive in this division and lose to the Steelers. You just cannot do it. You cannot do it. And let a 37-year-old quarterback with a surgically repaired elbow throw four touchdown passes for 333 yards. That's unacceptable. You can't expect to win football games that way. You can't expect to win divisions that way. You can't expect to win championships that way. And stop putting all of it on the shoulders of Joe Burrow. The other 52 guys that he shares that locker room with have to step up and carry their weight too. Alex Erickson, quit fumbling the football at the beginning of the game. An easy, simple punt falls right in your hands. You drop it on the ground. See, it's that little stuff like that is what sends me to 100 and pisses me off. So, mate, come on, man. You're a professional. You practice this. Catch the ball cleanly. The last thing the Steelers team needs is for you to turn over the football 9,000 times. But the Bengals, they play, what, Washington on Sunday? So they'll bounce back then. But this losing to the Steeler crap has got to end. It has to end. We cannot expect to compete for a division, cannot expect to be successful, cannot expect to win if we cannot beat teams within our own division. Case closed. Second item of business, Cardinals and the Seattle Seahawks. The Arizona Cardinals, of course, coming off of their win last second via the Hail Mary on Sunday, going on the road to play the Seattle Seahawks. Y'all, of course, remember when the last time these two teams played in Arizona, these two teams, last time they played, what, about 3 weeks ago when they played on Sunday night in Arizona, that game went way deep into the night and the Cardinals won in overtime. If I can get that final score for you guys, I will get it right now. 37-34 was the final score of that game. Of course, that game was also remembered for the DK Metcalf chasing down Buda Baker and Russell Wilson turning over the football, which essentially this is where this stream of bad play from Russell Wilson began, was with Russell Wilson turning over the football, throwing interceptions left, right in that game. And then, of course, his play has kind of gotten worse. He got back on track in the 49er game, but outside of the 49er game, his play has essentially gone downhill from there. come back home on a short week Thursday night, going up against the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona, of course, both of these two teams are 6-3 on the season. Cardinals and the Rams have the tiebreaker over the Seattle Seahawks because they've beaten them both. This is the second and the final meeting, unless these two teams play each other in the playoffs. The second and last meeting of these two teams is going to be a very intriguing. I honestly might be one of the best Thursday night football games of the season. Thursday night football isn't exactly, though that's like the bottom of the barrel as far as primetime football is concerned. But that can end up being one of the games of the year, a la the game was back in Glendale on October 25th. So you got Kyler Murray. Russell Wilson. Both of these guys are complete studs. One of the best. I wouldn't call Russell Wilson a young talent, but one of the best quarterback talents this league has to offer. The Seattle Seahawks defense stinks. So you will best believe that Kyler Murray is going to have a day. He's going to have a game of his life going up against the Seahawks. He doesn't have to deal with the 12th man and the crowd noise because, of course, coronavirus, no fans. So, and typically, that crowd would be given the Cardinals hell, primetime game at night, home packed house, 12th man, everything else. So typically he'd have to deal with that, but that stadium will be as quiet as a church mouse, which will be the Arizona's benefit. And then, of course, having to go up against a pathetic Seattle Seahawks defense, which is ranked dead last in the National Football League. But the offenses will be flying high. Seahawks ranked fifth in offense and in passing. The Arizona Cardinals offense ranked first in the National Football League, 15th in passing, first in rushing. So that will be a very intriguing and very vital football game as far as who wins the division, who's seated where in the NFC playoff picture, and all of that is concerned.
Yes.
So take a break, come right back, and I will talk Dustin Johnson and the Masters coming up right after this. Welcome back to the I'm Telling It Tell Is podcast. Switching gears now to golf right quick because we, of course, talked about it with the Masters. That was this past weekend. Tie a bow on the Masters, take a break, and then we'll get to a potpourri of items in sports. You got an issue with the Giants. Apparently Joe Judge, an assistant coach, got into a fight today. I'll talk about that. Of course, a couple items to get to as far as Major League Baseball is concerned, and of course NBA offseason happening there, and then that's how we will close out the program. But first things first, get to the golf and tie ribbon around the 2020 Masters, which is the last major of the year and will be the first major of the new year come April of 2021. Justin, in case you didn't know, Dustin Johnson won the whole thing. He broke a Masters record of 270 set by Tiger Woods in 1997 and tied by Jordan Spieth in 2015. He shot a 268. And all of his 72 holes that he played at the Masters, he finished the day with a 68, finished the day with the 68 and played real, real well throughout the entire tournament. I mean, just was just flawless, no drama. You know, because he ran away with it late. No drama. Was not competitive. I got, and I'm gonna get to Tiger in a minute. No drama, non-competitive. He basically sealed up. He basically shut down any competition that he may have had with that tournament on Sunday, and he went away with it clearly. And so, congratulations to Dustin Johnson, winning the 2020. Masters for the first time in his career. Tiger Woods, on the other hand, fell out on Friday and Saturday. You know, he didn't play poorly. Thursday he played one of his best rounds at Augusta he's ever had in his career. And he basically was okay, you know, finished with a minus one on Friday. Saturday, he finished at an even par. He bogeyed the 8th hole and he bogeyed the 11th hole, even though he did birdie the 12th and the 15th, which made it better. But then on Sunday, Tiger, you know, he was doing fine up until his first four holes. And then I go, you know, because it started early on Sunday because CBS had to, you know, make accommodations with the NFL and everything else. I leave to watch you know, the church, you know, good Jesus boy, as Brennan likes to say, go to the church. And of course, with coronavirus, I'm not a chance in hell. Me and my family are risking each other. You can have church anywhere, to be quite honest with you. It says in the Bible, if y'all want to come back and attack me, but that's not the end of there. I go down. I leave my bedroom. I had it streaming on the Masters app on my iPad. Go downstairs to watch church. Church ends. Come right back, and I look and I see that Tiger Woods shot a 10. On the 12th hole, and hit the ball into the water 3 times, and bogeyed holes 5, 7, and 10. So think about it for a minute. Tiger was doing decent. I had a slimmer of hope that a miracle could happen, because after last season and what craziness happened last season, and of course it is 2020, anything can. So I was like, well, maybe he can make it interesting late in the day, because, you know, he played what he birdied the second hole and was playing well first 4 holes of the game. Go to church, come back from church. I see he hit scored a 10 on the 12th hole and hit the ball into the water 3 times. And that was it for Tiger. And then lo and behold, holes 13 through 18, he plays one of his best, you know, it's birdies. And he pars the 14th, birdies the 13th, and birdies holes 15 through 18 to end his round, finishing out a plus 4 for the day. And finishes minus one, just under par for the entire tournament. So and then the extra salt on the wound is that Tiger had to stay because, of course, with the green jacket ceremony, puts on the green jacket and he has to put the jacket on Dustin Johnson. But that's where you stood with the Masters. The ratings for the final round of the Masters, lowest since 1957, declining 51% from Tiger's win last year and 57% from 2015. Joins the World Series, NBA Final, Stanley Cup Final, U.S. Open, Triple Crown, all setting all-time low ratings for their respective events during this coronavirus season when all of those events were put out of place because of said coronavirus. So, and this will debunk the narrative that, you know, people are not watching sports because athletes are protesting. Well, I watched the Masters from start to finish, from Thursday morning to Sunday morning. All round the clock, streaming it on the iPad and on the phone on the Masters app. And not one time did I see a protest, and not one time did anyone bring up Black Lives Matter and they were being interviewed. Not one mention of Breonna Taylor, not one mention of George Floyd. No Black Lives Matter t-shirt or cap was was worn. No kneeling, no national anthem being played, no kneeling during the national. So, you know, for Ted Cruz and Clay Travis, that thinks that, well, it's because of the only reason why ratings are down is because people are protesting. That's not the case. The reason is Clay and Ted is the fact that there's a pandemic going on and people, believe it or not, have bigger and more higher priorities than sitting around watching sports all day. Which I totally understand. The World Series, though, would scare me because unlike the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Final, the U.S. Open, and the Triple Crown, that, you know, the World Series is played in mid to late October. The NBA Finals is not played in October. The Stanley Cup Final is not played in late September, early October. You know, U.S. Open and the Triple Crown. There's that U.S. Open golf, there's a U.S. Open tennis. I'm reading off of a headline here, but it doesn't make it specific. If it's golf, okay, fine. Tennis, they played it as per normal in late August, early September. But there were no fans, of course, at that event in Queens, New York City. So and to be fair, no one's running to the TV to go watch Dustin. You know, when people found out that Tiger Woods was essentially playing well but out of championship contention, you lose about 80% of your audience right there. You know, no one is going to run to the TV or, you know, going to load up the Masters app on their phone or on the iPad to watch Dustin Johnson play. Unless you're Mike Babchick, who only wants to see Dustin Johnson play. So when he's finished and after he handshakes his caddy and the opponents and puts the green jacket on with Tiger, you know, Paulina Gretzky runs to him in a tight Adidas sundress. And so Mike Babchick can foam at the mouth over that. But no one in America runs to a TV to go watch Dustin Johnson play golf. Tiger, yes. Dustin Johnson, not a chance. Again, unless you're Babchick and you want to see Paulina Gretzky 9,000 times. Take a break. Come right back. Wrap up the show. Coming up, this is the Amatelicatelius podcast. Don't go anywhere. Back after this. Welcome back to the Amatelica TIA's podcast. Switching gears now, got a couple of items of business I want to get to before we say goodbye and close out the show. And thanks again for listening to the Amatelica TIA's podcast. We got a couple items to get to as far as baseball is concerned, and I got an item of football, and then, of course, the NBA. Theo Epstein, the GM for the Chicago Cubs that helped build that team that defeated the 108-year curse. He stepped down earlier this week as GM of the Chicago Cubs. He'll take a year off and then see if he wants to do any other work with another baseball organization later on in his career. He's 46 years of age, still got plenty of, I would imagine his career is still well ahead of him, well established in GM already. You know, if he were to retire tomorrow and say, you know what, that's it, he'd go into the Hall of Fame, considering that he's won 3 championships and constructed 2 rosters that have broken curses, the 04 Red Sox and, of course, the 2016 Chicago Cubs, as he steps down as GM for the Chicago Cub franchise and will, it looks like, take the 2021 season off to regather himself and to get himself organized. Robinson Cano, this news broke while I was in the middle of recording this news of Robinson Cano, second baseman, of course, of the New York Mets, formerly of the New York Yankees and the Seattle Mariners. He is suspended for the entire 2001 MLB season because he has tested positive, not for coronavirus, no. I mean, 2020, you hear test positive, all of a sudden you think corona. But no, he is suspended for the entire 2021 season for PED use. So he says goodnight, and that's the coup de grace for Robinson Cano. In his 2021 MLB season before the clock strikes midnight on January 1st of 2021. Last item to get to, and then I'll get to the NBA. Joe Judge and offensive line coach Mark Colombo got into a verbal altercation, prompting in Joe Judge firing him. Not too much has been said since. Joe Judge, of course, he is the head coach of the New York Football Giants. Took care of business against the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday, and beating them by the final score of 27-17. They're 3-7 on the year, but got into an argument with offensive line coach. Joe Judge fired him. And when the news breaks of that, more details come out, I will, of course, talk about that on Saturday's podcast. Switching gears now to a league that I have not talked about heavy since October when the NBA Finals were played, and that is 2020 NBA free agency, and you got trades, and, of course, you got the draft tonight. Just get to a couple of items here. Pelicans traded. The Bucks would send Bucks sent Eric Bledsoe and George Hill plus 3 future first round picks to New Orleans for shooting guard Drew Holiday. Pelicans, of course, looking to compete with Zion, of course, trying to make it into the playoffs as a bottom tier seed. This upcoming basketball season, while the Milwaukee Bucks trying to win a championship, doing everything in their power to make sure that Giannis doesn't leave them and go off to Golden State or any other team like that. They want to keep Giannis in Milwaukee, so that would explain those moves there. Rockets send Robert Covington to Portland for Trevor Ariza and a 2020 first round pick and a 2021 first round pick. So that's the story with the Rockets. Also, and I'll get to the Rockets and James Harden in a minute. Chris Paul traded to the Phoenix Suns, and Kelly Oubre, Ricky Rubio, Ty Jerome, and Jalen Lacqui and a 2022 first round pick sent to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Thunder, of course, having a surprise season. Chris Paul essentially resurrecting his career, which is why the Thunder got so much for him in that trade, with a phenomenal season that he had leading the Oklahoma City Thunder to the playoffs this past fall. And then, of course, let's see if I got any other things for you. Let's see. I'll get to James Harden and Russell Westbrook in a minute. And, of course, you have Daryl Morey, who's, of course, the Philadelphia 76ers executive. And that's all we stand with the NBA. Now, as far as free agency and trades and all that sort of stuff is concerned. When it comes to Russell Westbrook James Harden and the Rockets. Okay, James Harden saying that, you know, he don't want to be a part of the Rockets organization because the owner's a Trump supporter. Well, how did James Harden just find that out? So I'm not crushing him on that. You know, he can do what he wants, but I call bull on that being the reason why he wants to get out of Houston. The reason why he wants to get out of Houston is because his coach is gone, the GM's gone, And he realizes that as he's coming down the turnpike on his career, and he still hasn't been to a NBA Finals yet, let alone, knowing that he hasn't won an NBA Finals yet, and his clock's ticking on his career, he figures to essentially take the easy way out and go the cheap route and team up with Durant and Kyrie Irving and try to measle his way into Brooklyn. Which if I'm Brooklyn, that is the last thing I want. Okay, Kevin Durant, fine, but two guys that are me guys that want the ball all the time, and Kyrie Irving and James, these two guys cannot under any circumstances play side by side amongst each other and expect to coexist and expect the Brooklyn Nets to do well. They just can't. Those are two guys, me guys, weird guys, ego guys that want the ball, that want the basketball in their hand every single possession. And there's only one basketball and there's three of them. There's one James Harden, one Kyrie Irving, and one Kevin Durant. That if the Brooklyn Nets sign off on that and actually accept the trade, James Harden to the Brooklyn Nets, the Brooklyn Nets might as well just take themselves out of the running of winning an NBA championship, because you cannot under any circumstances win an NBA championship with James Harden on your team. You can't do it. He didn't win with Oklahoma City, and he hasn't won in Houston. A bona fide playoff choker. Okay, and was terrible in that, what was that, game six or game seven against Oklahoma City, where he couldn't throw the ball off a boat into the Gulf of Mexico, and yet he made one great play on defense and saved the game, and all of a sudden everyone wanted to crown him as Defensive Player of the Year. Nonsense. Okay, he is a terrible playoff performer. Shoots bricks more threes you can shake a stick at, wants everyone to go gaga and to go crazy about his greatness because he drops 50 on the Phoenix Suns in a cold Wednesday night in the middle of February. Nobody cares. When the lights shine the brightest, and when it comes time for James Harden to show up and approve his muster as a quote-unquote Hall of Fame worthy player, Hall of Fame talent, he never does it. He is a bona fide playoff choker. He's proven that. All you gotta do is watch the games, look at the stats. He has not proven to America that he is a championship caliber player. He will have you play competitive basketball through 82 games throughout the regular season, and he'll win you some basketball games. He will have you competitive. He will draw the local fan to the arena to watch him play. I'm not disputing that. He will make the team respectable. He will make the team watchable. He will make the team competitive. As far as winning a championship, James Harden is the last guy I would want on my basketball team. Especially with the nutcase Kyrie Irving that still thinks the world is flat. And Kevin Durant, who didn't say, I'll go to Brooklyn by myself and prove I can win by myself. No. He took LeBron's right-hand man, Kyrie Irving, with him. Those three personalities, those three egos cannot coexist. Okay, and just because you play well 3-on-3, on Venice Beach, in Venice Beach quarantine with masks on in the middle of August, in the middle of September, doesn't mean it's going to translate well in the NBA. With an inexperienced coach and Steve Nash to boot, that's a recipe for disaster. If Brooklyn actually goes out their way to go get James Harden, a disaster. And again, Russell Westbrook, same thing. The only difference with Westbrook is that he goes out there, he gives you his all. So he's a little bit more of a grittier and a more I don't want to say tough, but more of a he's a grinder. He goes out there, gives you an effort. He goes out there, plays all 82 games. He puts on a show for you. He's a competitor, so you like that. He's got that dog in him, Westbrook, which you like. Problem is, he's no good. He's no better of a playoff performer than James Harden is. Both of them, when the lights shine the brightest and when the rubber has to meet the road come postseason time, whether they're playing in April, May, and June, or August, September, October. Well, not October, but August, September, or April and May. Whether it's in Toyota Center, at Oracle, or in the bubble in Orlando, they never ever deliver the goods. And that's the way it's been, and unfair or not, that's the way their career is going to be remembered, unless some drastic changes. But if I am the Houston Rockets, I would not go anywhere near getting James Harden. I don't care how much money he wants. I don't care how. I could care less. He's not a championship basketball player. And him with the two dynamic personalities and KD, Kyrie Irving, in the market that is New York City, that's not going to bode well. It just isn't. I'm sorry. It's not going to bode well. Too many egos. Too many guys on that team that want the basketball at the same time. Again, just because you play well 3-on-3, you know, in your driveway during quarantine, doesn't mean it's going to translate well in the NBA on the hardwood. You know, 5-on-5 with two extra teammates you got to play with, five guys on the opposition in front of. Well, it won't be at the start of this season, but you know, in general, in front of a sold out arena every single night. This won't happen. As far as the draft is concerned, you got the draft tonight. Warriors favored to win the NBA championship, having the second pick in the draft. Timberwolves have the number one pick. Charlotte has number three. Bulls have number four. Cavs have five. Hawks have six. Pistons have seven. Knicks, the lowly Knicks, have eight. The Wizards have nine. Suns have 10. Spurs have 11. Kings have 12. Pelicans have 13. The Celtics get a pick from Memphis at 14. Magic have a pick at 15. The Portland Trailblazers have a pick at 16. And then, of course, they got the Timberwolves, a pick from Brooklyn at 17. Mavericks at 18. Nets at 19. Heat at 20. 76ers 21 from OKC. Denver gets a pick from Houston at 22. Knicks get a pick from Utah at 23. Bucks get a pick from Indiana at 24. The Thunder get a pick from Denver 25. Celtics 26. Jazz get a pick from the Knicks through the Clippers at 27. Lakers, of course, the champions at 28. And let's see. Raptors at 29. And then last pick goes to the Celtics from Milwaukee as the last pick to wrap up the first round of the NBA draft, which starts tonight. I couldn't break, you know, I leave Stephen A. Smith to break down who should go where. I am not, you know, I haven't seen the little college basketball that was played. I can recall probably watching maybe a game or two. No March Madness, which also helps the average fan and yours truly get to know these players a lot through March Madness and the exposure of playing in the NCAA tournament. Didn't have that, of course, because of coronavirus. So I've heard of some of the names, but I can't, be quite honest with you, break down their play basket for basket, you know, and break down every asset. You know, how's their rebounding? How's their three-point? How's their jump shot? How's their mid-range? How's their three-ball? How's their free throws? You know, can they rebound? I can't do that. You know, if the with the forwards and the centers, how well can they post up in the paint? I can't do that for you. But you got the draft. It's tonight. It's a sporting event, I guess. NFL draft. So you got a sporting event on tonight. You can be glued to the TV on ESPN, same way the NFL did it, virtual, you know, where the broadcasters at the ESPN campus, and it's all virtual inside of people's houses, like just like the NFL was. So you into the draft tonight, knock yourself out. I'll read up on it, I'll get the Twitter updates, but I'm not sitting hour upon hour watching the NBA draft. My behind is going to be watching the newest episode of Chicago PD on NBC, so I will have myself, I will be situated as far as my Wednesday night entertainment is concerned. And then, of course, you have Thursday night between the Cardinals and the Seahawks, And then a couple, and Sunday, of course, you have your NFL, and Saturday, your college football, and carry yourself from there on in. That is your episode of the Amatelica TIS podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe. Follow the show on Twitter at Amatel_ITIS. Follow the show on Instagram at Amatel_podcast. Follow your boy on Twitter and Instagram at the J Shield. It's your boy Josh Shields. This has been another episode of the Amatelica TIS podcast. Talk to y'all Saturday. Be safe. Y'all take care.